The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer. List of today's guests. Signing in chat room. Lining up news articles. Checking levels. Adjusting camera. Secure wire connection. Restart computer. Checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is. And she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Welcome to a busy, busy Thursday. So we're going to jump right in. We got a doubleheader for you. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Howie Klein and Santa Claus. I'm not kidding. And he's running for Congress from Alaska. I swear. Stick around. You'll see for yourself. But first, I need a good lawyer. Lisa Graves is one of the best legal minds that I know, and that's why I like to call on her at times like this. Lisa is the founder, executive director, and editor-in-chief at TrueNorthResearch.org, where she spearheads all kinds of investigations into people distorting American democracy and public policy. That's a good line. But your background is very varied as well. Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Policy at the Department of Justice in the Clinton administration. Chief Counsel for Nominations under Senator Patrick Leahy at the Senate Judiciary Committee. Deputy Chief of the Article 3 Judges Division of the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts. I don't even know what that means. It just sounds really important, Lisa.
Well, it's the office that works with all of the lifetime appointed judges for the federal courts. There's more than 700 of them.
Wow.
We help staff the committees of the Judicial Conference, which is where the judges make internal policy. So that's what that role was before I went to work for the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Gotcha. And in 2018, you also helped shape the national conversation around the Brett Kavanaugh nomination. And I guess that's a good place to start because, boy, aside from all the problems that many of us had with Brett Kavanaugh during his confirmation hearings, like his lack of composure, you know, his temperament, his background, we now find out that he lied. He lied under oath, didn't he?
Well, he was a liar in my view already. He lied under oath to the Senate Judiciary Committee when he was nominated to the D.C. Circuit. He lied at the beginning of those confirmation hearings when he was talking about documents that have been stolen from me and from the Senate Judiciary Committee by a Republican staffer and given to him.
Wow.
And then he lied about substantive law in terms of his willingness to follow precedent, to recognize precedent, and namely to follow Roe versus Wade and accept that decision is the law of the land. And so he is a liar many times over. In this instance, his lies have, you know, devastating consequences for millions and millions of Americans.
Yes, yes. I'm going to play you a quick 17-second clip that just says it all.
It is an important precedent of the Supreme Court. By it, I mean Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Been reaffirmed many times. Casey is precedent on precedent, which itself is an important factor to remember.
It's an important factor to remember. What does it mean when the Supreme Court sets a precedent, Lisa?
Well, the legal precedents are, rulings by the court. And when rulings are repeatedly affirmed by, subsequent courts and subsequent rulings, that traditionally, gives them additional strength or additional weight. And so a legal precedent is a decision by the Supreme Court. And in this case, with Roe versus Wade, it's a decision that's, more than or nearly 50 years old. And it is also based on other key precedents, like the Griswold versus Connecticut case that barred states from barring people, women in particular, from getting access to contraceptives. And this is the line of cases that's under assault by Brett Kavanaugh and his friend Samuel Alito and Amy Coney Barrett, Neil Gorsuch, and and Clarence Thomas. Mm-hmm. And this whole line of cases is crucial to Americans' fundamental human rights, for their privacy, for our intimate lives. And that's the line of cases that is being attacked and assailed by this extremist faction that now controls the Supreme Court.
Right. So when he said precedent upon precedent, Roe v. Wade set the precedent, and then the other case, the other one that they mentioned in this,
Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Right. Yep. It just what increased the precedent? Said this is twice affirmed. Did you ever think that today would come? Look, I know that for almost the entirety that we had Roe v. Wade in place, the Republicans have always threatened to overturn it. But to me, it always seemed as if it were more of a fundraiser. This was a good issue for them to raise, to make money, and to claim their holier than thou status. But I never thought they'd ever overturn it, because too many people are against overturning it. Popular opinion is not with them.
Well, I have to say that I feared this when I awoke to the news that Trump had been, in essence, declared the president, and he had been relying upon Leonard Leo, someone who I consider to be a right-wing extremist who is vehemently opposed to women's reproductive rights and Roe versus Wade, and he'd given over, in essence, basically outsourced the selection process to Leonard Leo, with his extreme views and his devotion to not just overturning Roe, but overturning key precedents of the 20th century regarding our ability to regulate corporations through agencies and Congress. And so I feared that day, but I too, like you, Nicole, considered a lot of the rhetoric and attacks by Republican politicians to be political, to be about fundraising. But I think they've determined that they're going to just use this now to raise money in the states as they continue to assail these rights and, in fact, push really extraordinary, outrageous, regressive measures like the Texas law, this sort of bounty law, and even measures in states to bar women and girls who've been the victims of rape or incest from having access to abortion. And it certainly bears remembering that Brett Kavanaugh, there's evidence on the record under oath that Brett Kavanaugh attempted to sexually assault Christine Blasey Ford.
Yep.
And there's other evidence that's been reported in other stories about his treatment of other women. And so now you have a man who is on the Supreme Court who is accused of attempting to sexually assault a woman, basically allowing states to bar women from having access to abortion, including in cases of rape, including in cases of pregnancy from sexual assault.
It's incredible. I want to play a short video for you. It was produced by Midas Touch, the three brothers who came out of the worlds of marketing and law and sports, I believe, to use their creativity to make these commercials. And now they've got a whole empire going. But they put together a video featuring our Supreme Court justices showing what hypocrites they are. And it starts with, of all people, Clarence Thomas. Here's the video.
I believe the Constitution protects the right to privacy, and I have no reason or agenda to prejudge the issue.
He lied. I'll read the text
Roe
on the screen.
Wade is an
this is Alito
of the Supreme Court. It was decided in 1973. It has been challenged on a number of occasions, and the Supreme Court has reaffirmed the decision. When a decision is challenged and it is reaffirmed, that strengthens its value.
Huh. Alito, he lied.
Roe versus Wade decided in 1973.
This is Gorsuch.
It's a precedent of the United States Supreme Court. It has been reaffirmed, so a good judge will consider it as precedent of the United States Supreme Court, worthy as treatment of precedent like any other.
He lied. That was Gorsuch.
As a judge, it is
Kavanaugh.
An important precedent of the Supreme Court. By it, I mean Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Been reaffirmed many times. Casey is precedent on precedent.
He lied.
I do not believe that Brett Kavanaugh will overturn.
Precedents are overturned all the time.
They aren't overturned all the time.
More,
he views precedent not just as a legal doctrine, but as rooted in our Constitution.
And lied again.
For whom you voted, don't you think he's probably going to vote to overturn Roe versus Wade if given the chance?
I actually don't.
Oh, please.
Roe is not a super precedent because calls for its overruling have never ceased, but that doesn't mean that Roe should be overruled.
Oh, God, that's Amy Coney Barrett. They all lied, it says on the screen. Hashtag lying GOP. A very effective spot that's running on the interwebs, Lisa Graves. This is just overwhelming. And how did they deny that they've lied? I mean, it's right there.
Well, in essence, you know, they are politicians who've been chosen to advance these results. They sort of pose in many ways as judges. They obviously are actually judges. But in reality, they were handpicked to reach this result. That's why Leonard Leo recommended them to Trump, and Trump chose them. And they're doing what they basically were chosen to do. They're doing what the dark money interests, the secret billionaires, as well as Charles Koch, who has funded Leonard Leo and his court packing, court capture operations, want to be done, which is to reverse major precedents that Americans rely upon, because a couple of billionaires, in particular, who are bankrolling these efforts, don't like them. And most of those billionaires don't have the guts to come forward and tell the American people who they are and share with the American people their true agenda. This set of decisions, Roe versus Wade and the right to abortion, is more popular than any president of the United States and basically any member of Congress. These rights are valued by people from all political backgrounds, from all political parties, and even Republicans. Some Republicans support women having access to abortion, and including in cases of rape and incest, but under the principles of Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And so these five members of this faction that is now in control of the Supreme Court have extreme views. They're entitled to those views personally. What they're not entitled to do is to impose their personal religious beliefs on the American people as binding law. Right. And that's in essence what they're doing. And it is the case that sometimes precedents are overruled. It's not that every precedent lasts forever, and so that's sort of the way in which they're going to claim that they're not liars and hypocrites and perjurers. But the fact is that they reaffirmed in those hearings under oath that that was good precedent, that that was important precedent, that these precedents have been repeatedly reaffirmed. And yet now, because of the appointment by Donald Trump with the help of Mitch McConnell, backed by these secret dark money billionaires and millionaires who want to destroy our rights, with the addition of Amy Coney Barrett, this is the first full term of the Supreme Court where they have the opportunity to overrule Roe versus Wade, and they are seemingly, based on the decision that was leaked, planning to do it. And in that decision, they call into question core precedents that Americans rely upon, including that right to privacy, that access to contraception, as well as precedents that relate to gay marriage and people's ability to marry who they love.
Yes.
The right of American adults to marry who they love, as something that's rooted in our Constitution's notions of privacy and freedom.
So do you worry? Do you worry about Obergefell, the marriage equality, the gay rights, the marriage equality case being overturned? Because this seems to have set all of those cases on edge, hasn't it?
That's correct. I mean, that's certainly what the draft opinion by Sam Alito, who was an appointee of George W. Bush.
Yep.
That's what that decision attacks and calls into question. And that is a decision that has been attacked by people, a minority of Americans who are entitled to their own opinion about whether they themselves want to have a marriage if they're gay, but they are not entitled under the President of the United States to bar other Americans from having access to the rights of being married and marrying the person that they love. And so all those rights are under attack and at risk based on this extremist faction that now dominates the U.S. Supreme Court. And my hope is that people will repel this effort, will join together to overcome this determination by literally a handful of human beings, people on the Supreme Court who weren't elected,
right,
who were subject to just one Democratic check, which is that confirmation hearing where they promised to follow the law and not be activists. And those individuals are now using their power to destroy the rights of millions of American people. And I think it's terrible. And we cannot accept it. We have to organize to overcome this judicial fiat, this extreme hubris, this arrogance of these people who know that's why Leonard Leo handpicked them, that they could destroy the precedent that he himself loathes and that his secret funders want to have removed from our constitutional precedents.
It's amazing. So, Lisa, so the polling, as it has for years and years and years, says that women's right to choose is wildly popular. It's embraced by more than 70% of the population. A poll taken in the last couple of days says it's more than 2-1 people supporting Roe v. Wade, that decision, rather than wanting it overturned. But that doesn't matter to these five people on the Supreme Court who are putting their own personal wants and needs above, I think, the rule of law. And so they're overturning this precedent, something that stood almost 50 years. Now, common wisdom would tell me that this is not going to be popular with the electorate, even their Republican base, many of which do not want Roe v. Wade overturned. Do you think this can backfire on them? I hope it can. I'm wondering if you think it can.
I think it will definitely backfire on them because it just shows how extreme, how regressive, how narrow these right-wingers are that have come to dominate the courts and the Republican Party, quite frankly, in my personal view. But it is also the case that these same Republicans have used the power in the legislatures to really attack fair maps and to expand their control in legislatures, even though in some states like Wisconsin and North Carolina, they're the minority party in reality, meaning a person can win statewide office. A Democrat could win the presidency, in essence, or the governorship. But because of the way the maps are drawn by Republicans in those states, Wisconsin and North Carolina, for example, the majority in the state legislature are Republicans. So you have a situation where that sort of minority rule, that sort of minority tyranny, means that even though a majority of the people in a particular state may support Roe versus Wade, the legislature has been rigged to install in power the Republican Party and the most partisan,
yes,
of those Republicans, the most extreme of those Republicans, who don't care about other people's rights in that way, who want to destroy these privacy rights to basically feed the fringe of their base and the most anti-choice individuals, and who also want to destroy our ability to regulate the corporations and the CEOs that are helping to keep them in office. And one of the things that has happened in recent months and years is that Leonard Leo, the fellow I mentioned, mm-hmm, who has gotten very rich in recent years, it seems, from being the conduit of money from these dark billionaire millionaires to these anti-choice groups and groups that are involved in trying to laws. This guy has also been helping to steer money to state attorneys general, to state attorney general races, and to state Supreme Court races.
Wow.
And so he's, trying to move the chess pieces so that it's not just at the federal level where our rights are being assailed, but that at the state level, the people in positions of power in those states will affirm extremist determinations by right-wing attorneys general or right-wing legislatures to further destroy these fundamental rights, these fundamental human rights of American women and girls to be able to choose their destiny and have access to abortion care and have the ability to make decisions of their own conscience and with the advice of their own physicians.
Right. And the thing that, I mean, that I unless I missed it, because you put a lot of information in there, Lisa, is that the other thing they're doing in all of these states that Republicans have control, they are replacing the always historically nonpartisan supervisor of elections offices or secretary of state, the ones that do control the elections, replacing them with partisan actors, with highly partisan Republicans who would facilitate Donald Trump's coup if given another chance.
Well, that is it is truly horrifying that these extremists, people who don't believe, despite all of the evidence, that they don't believe that the election in 2020 was legitimate, even though every state certified that election. And there's no documented evidence of any widespread voter fraud or any type of fraud that would overturn that election. They're putting those kind of people who are beholden to Donald Trump, in my personal view, the most venal, most corrupt, most morally bankrupt person ever to serve as president. Mm-hmm. They're putting fanboys and fangirls of this man into positions of power over our elections. And they've even tried to basically change the rules so that state legislatures could supplant the vote of the American people.
Yep.
And they've tried to replace people at the county level in order to basically try to use the counties in large metropolitan areas to overrule the votes of the people who live in the cities. This is nothing more than an assault on the fundamental principles of our democracy. This is, in the case of the January 6th insurrection and the incitement of it, to me, that's a criminal act, not just the disruption of our democracy, but a criminal act. And then you have these handmaidens and handmen of Donald Trump using their power in the states to try to determine, putting people in place who will help him, in essence, actually steal the election in 2024 if he runs, and if it's close, or maybe even if it's not close.
This is truly bone chilling. Everyone should be freaked out. And the thing is, you know, I always had in the back of my mind that this stuff couldn't possibly happen. There are protections in place, but in reality, there aren't. There's nobody coming to save us, is there?
Well, we're going to have to save ourselves, unfortunately, because, Congress is so broken by the filibuster and by the way in which the right wing votes in lockstep, 100%, voting against, things that most Americans want and need, whether that's, paid leave or investments in, 21st century economy to really try to mitigate climate change. You have a Congress that, despite Democratic control, is actually really ruled by the minority because of, the power Mitch McConnell has. And with the help of, a couple of Democrats who have really betrayed core principles of the party and gone against the public will. But you also have these states where in some of these states, traditionally, they have been, more progressive over time. But in the last 10 years, since the Citizens United decision of the Supreme Court that injected so much dark money from these outside groups into our elections, we have state legislatures that are increasingly extremist and right wing. And they then in turn have used their power to further entrench themselves through these election rules and through the map drawing, so that they're not responsive to the majority of the people in the state. They're responsive only to their party primaries, basically to the most fringe within their own political party.
Right. And you know what, Lisa, it sounds like you're describing your very state. You live in Wisconsin. I remember Wisconsin was always a bastion of progressivism. I mean, that's the home of where the progressive movement. And it's gotten, over the course of the last decade or so, more and more nuts. I mean, you got Ron Johnson replacing Russ Feingold. It doesn't get crazier than that, does it?
Yeah. I mean, that is awful. Although there are some dark parts of Wisconsin history, like Joe McCarthy.
Yeah, right.
So it wasn't always great. But that raises a great point, Nicole, which is, you know, that Roe versus Wade decision, it was a 7-3 decision. And there were people in the majority of that decision that was both people were appointed by both Republican presidents and Democratic presidents.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Justice Blackmun, who wrote that decision, was an appointee of Richard M. Nixon.
Wow.
And so there was a time in which the Republican Party, you know, was not so extreme. And that those progressive roots you point to in Wisconsin, that was La Follette,
yes,
who was a progressive Republican, you know, who advanced this Republican, you know, this idea of progressivism. But the Republican Party of now has gone so far to the extreme, they've purged anyone who might be moderate. They purge people who from the political party, from power, who are pro-choice, who respect these fundamental rights. And so, you know, now you have a court that with a group of justices who've been appointed by one party, three of whom were appointed by Trump. You know, they are really out of step with most Americans, as you point out, and they are certainly out of sync with actually the Republican Party, you know, over time in terms of its, you know, prior progressivism in reality.
Right. So here we are. We're 6 months out from Election Day. Do you think, I mean, the Democrats need to mobilize based on this. The Democrats need to take this and say, this is just the beginning of what they want to do. If you value your freedom, I mean, they use the word freedom. The opposite world nature of how they gaslight the world is just so front and center. But the Democrats, I hope that they can rise to the occasion and use this and get people, get women up in arms to come out and vote to say this is not okay. That's our only chance, isn't it?
Well, I think this is going to necessitate long-term organizing in resistance to overcome this regressive, you know, this regressive minority tyranny. And so I think it's going to take sort of multi-year organizing to repel this and repeal these efforts in these states. And I think that we will. I know that we can do it, that the American people can come together and can overcome these sorts of regressive forces. The challenge is, you know, it's not always instant. And the right wing has been pushing for this, you know, since the Republican Party in 1976 attacked Roe versus Wade.
Yep.
And Ronald Reagan claimed he was going to put people on the court to overturn Roe. That Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision was one in which Sandra Day O'Connor, who was an appointee of Reagan,
yeah,
ruled that Roe is, as she testified, also is precedent and needed to be honored, could not be overturned because it reflects those fundamental interests and rights of Americans, the American people. And she was the one who helped reaffirm it in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And that decision has been assailed by these right-wing extremists who, notwithstanding the fact that she acted in that instance like a judge should in following precedent and not overturning it based on personal political views.
Right.
They don't have that reservation. They're not really judges in that way. They're really politicians and extremists who've been chosen in order to overturn our rights. And they need to be called out by the public. I think some of them need to be impeached.
Yep.
And I think we need to expand the court to address this extreme capture, this effort to pack the court by the right wing in order to destroy our rights. There's no reason that court should be 9 people. Our country has grown by, you know, more than 100 million people since that number was set.
Yep.
And we have a right to have a court that reflects America and that looks like America and isn't captured by these dark money interests.
Do we have the right leaders in place in the Democratic Party to do that? Because it seems to me that they're running in place, it seems. They're stuck with and not taking any of the important steps they need to take to fix this.
Well, I think there are definitely some, you know, a number of people who are really trying to redress this and address it, including people like Senator Whitehouse, who's been who's been so you know, so eloquent in speaking about this attack on our fair courts. But there's no doubt we need more more people to come into the party who are progressive, who believe in our Constitution and its guarantee of equal protection of the law, who believe in women's fundamental equality as human beings and their right to choose their destiny, who believe that people have these inherent rights to our, you know, intimate lives, to not have that be intruded on by, you know, by thugs in Texas and by bounty hunters who would attack women, you know, seeking to exercise these rights either in Texas or by traveling out of state. We have, you know, sort of a Handmaid's Tale moment here where we are now on this extremely regressive path set in place by some very right-wing funders, secret funders, who have been trying to orchestrate this very ruling. And then we have a majority of people who disagree with those decisions. And so in a democracy, we need to make our voices heard and take whatever lawful steps we can to ensure that our voices are heard.
We got a heavy lift ahead of us for the foreseeable future. I hate to say it, probably for the rest of my life. It's not supposed to be this way. Things were not supposed to be this way, but here we are. And, you know, now our challenge is even greater. Lisa Graves, I guess we need to organize. We need to march. We need to vote. We need to register people to vote. We need to make sure everybody knows why this is happening. I hope we're up to the challenge.
Well, you know, we are all in this moment and have the opportunity to help change the course of history. We have the power to do so if we choose to do it. And I remain hopeful and I suppose even confident that the American people will reject these extremists and will reject this extremely regressive agenda and insist that America be a 21st century democracy that respects the rights of women and that honors people's rights to marry who they choose and that ensures that we do not have a theocracy right. in America, that we do not have theocratic rule, the rule by a particular religion or religious sect or subsect of that religion imposing their views yep. on all of us as Americans, because America was, you know, in some ways, some of the roots of America are about that fundamental religious freedom of conscience and to not have the state impose its religious views on the people, which is what this Supreme Court is doing or this faction the court is doing and what the people like Leonard Leo have attempted to engraft on our Constitution is this this notion that these individuals' religious beliefs should be our law.
Right. You know, it's amazing. These are the same people who scream about Sharia law. Well, this is Christian Sharia law. That's exactly what it is. And it's them imposing their religious beliefs on the rest of us. And yeah. And that's where we are. Lisa Graves,
Well, that's why I'm hopeful, Nicole. I'm hopeful, because the American people do not want other people's religious beliefs imposed on them.
Right.
So I think we have a chance to overcome this outrageous, arrogant act by these politicians in black robes.
I hope so. I'm going to try to remember your words when I get all discouraged and defeatist, because that's how I am. But I'm going to try to take some of your optimism, Lisa, and believe it, because we need to think positively, too. Lisa Graves, thank you for weighing in today. This is just such a weird time that it's great to have someone with your expertise give us your thoughts on the matter. I really appreciate it. No time to rest. Who's mixing up the Dirty Debbies today?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down
with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole. I hope you're well.
I'm doing okay, actually. And I'm better now because Santa Claus is here.
Thanks, Nicole. Thanks for having me here.
Howie. So, hey, Santa, welcome to the show. Now, I guess you know all about us, right? Because there were lists kept.
Yes.
Different kind of lists than they're keeping today, though, right?
We keep you on the nice list.
That's good. Santa Claus is running for Congress from Alaska. You're running to take the seat that was vacated when Don Young died. So when is the special election?
Special election is June 11th, but there's mail-in voting going on as of today, tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Or it's Monday somewhere, yeah.
Somewhere in there.
I'm kind of looking forward to. They mailed out the ballots last Thursday, so it depends on when people get the ballot.
So
it's an all male election. Is that correct?
That's correct, Howie. Yep.
All male is in mail in ballots, not all male candidates.
That's right.
Yes.
Right. 48 candidates, and there are. It's a ranked choice election, isn't it?
That's correct. Yep, ranked choice.
And that's
my
favorites. Reason why Santa is likely to be the next congressperson from Alaska. Ranked choice voting means probably everybody who doesn't vote for Santa as their number one choice will vote for Santa as their number two choice, and that means he's going to win.
That would be great. Now, but you're only running in this special election, so you would, if you win, you'll hold office for a year. You're not then running in November for the seat that for the seat then that starts in the next in the 118th Congress.
Yeah, that's correct. I think 4 months is enough in Washington for me. I was born in Washington, D.C., so I actually get to see a few friends and people I've known through the years.
Were you? Okay. Well, you know, you're obviously a curiosity. We see those of us watching a video stream see you, and the resemblance to the original Santa Claus is undeniable. What made you change your name and become Santa Claus?
Well, growing up, I developed this heart for children. I was very lucky and was in a wonderful family, sort of upper middle class living in New York City. We had this great upbringing, wonderful Christmases, went off to boarding school. So through the years, especially in boarding school, I got to meet a bunch of other people who weren't quite as well off or privileged as I might have been back then. And I started listening to what they had to say, and I took it to heart. And as I got older, I got into film school at New York University, film and TV, and I started doing videotapes that were on WNET and WGBH on police. They're the first black and white tapes that actually came out chronicling some of the emergency service district in New York City's police department. And saw a lot of children falling through the cracks with respect to social services, et cetera. And I grew out my beard for fun in 2004. And it came out, as you see it now, kind of bright and white. And people said, oh, we ought to do the Santa thing, which I did for about 30 nonprofits around the lake.
Wow.
It was well received. And that winter, actually in February, I was walking to the post office praying as monks tend to do. I'm a monk in real life. Praying, what should I do with this appearance? How can I use it to help the greatest number of children? So I had finished my prayer. About 20 seconds later, this white nondescript car came up the road, and the male voice shouted out right after my prayer, Santa, I love you. And this is in February. So I figured, well, that's about as quick an answer to prayer as I'm going to get. So the next day, I went over to the county clerk's office and went through the process of changing the name.
Wow. Wow.
So that's how that sort of happened.
Okay.
I'm glad I did it.
When did you decide to move to North Pole?
2013. I've been at Lake Tahoe and calling up legislators, state and federal, saying, hey, this is Santa Claus in Lake Tahoe. Excuse me, doesn't have the same gravitas is, this is Santa Claus from North Pole, Alaska. Believe it or not, it sounds right. stupid, but it's a very powerful tool. And I went on a tour in about 15 years ago called Santa's Bless the Children Tour, and went to all the states, visited with governors and their staffs and the senators who had offices in the capital cities, and then went to our nation's capital and saw the people I kind of missed on the tour. We talked about children's issues, health, safety, and welfare. And the bless the children part comes from a blessing that I usually give children. So I try and get them away from the crass, commercial, secular, you know, spectacle that Christmas has become in many places. So the blessing is, if you don't mind me saying it, is may you have a lifetime that's filled with happiness, peace, good health, prosperity, and most of all, love, the greatest gift. And kids get it. Kids understand right away. And I think it's a little bit comforting for them.
Sure. Well, so
that whole Santa thing happened.
That's a great message. So you live, there is a town called North Pole, Alaska. You're not at the North Pole. No. You're in Alaska. Okay.
Yeah, this little town is 2,200 souls, and we're very close to Fairbanks. We're right in the center of Alaska. And Alaska, by the way, is more than two times the size of Texas.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a pretty big state.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it on maps, but it is.
So you,
and North Pole is a suburb of Fairbanks, and Santa is the mayor pro tem of it, and it's a very, very right wing town. Am I right about that? It's a real right wing town.
That's very conservative. You're right, Howie. Yep.
I think most of Alaska is, isn't it?
No, yeah, no,
most of Alaska is. However, Alaska. During the election with remember when. Bernie was running against Hillary.
Yes.
Up here in the Democratic primary, he garnered 82% of the vote.
Wow.
So there are a lot of Bernie supporters here in Alaska, and I have an affinity for Bernie. And when people ask me about my platform, I just refer them to BernieSanders.com/issues. Saves me having to put up 20 pages on my little website, SantaClausForAlaska.com.
Santa Claus is with us. He is a candidate running in the special election to represent Alaska in Congress. So what kind of response have you gotten since you declared your candidacy?
So far, it's been great. I've been on, when I'm just walking around, since I'm pretty visible, I don't have a car, I haven't had one for about 10 years. And when I'm walking to the supermarket or over to the post office or just making the rounds in town or going to City Hall, people just stop me with or without their kids and just start talking. And I usually wind up giving them that blessing and stuff. And they'll ask me about different policy things, some that affect the city of North Pole, some that affect, you know, whatever, what I'm doing with my campaign, you know, for the U.S. House. And we have these great conversations. And even if people might disagree, we can always find common ground. So even with Don Young, I knew him, and even though our perspective, you know, our political perspectives were quite disparate, he and I found common ground with the Congressional Cannabis Caucus.
Ah.
Of all things.
Interesting.
I've been a medical marijuana patient for about a decade. For cancer, it helps.
And is it legal in Alaska? I don't know what the status
is
there.
In Alaska, yeah, it has been for quite a while, mostly because of the way Alaska's privacy laws are set up.
Alaska was one of the first states in the country to make it legal.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm down here in Florida, where it's
a red state electorally, generally speaking. But Alaska is a very pro-union state, also, as well as a pro-marijuana state. So it's almost like a libertarian state. More than a straight ahead Republican state. But, you know, I don't know if you knew this or not, Santa, but since the last time we spoke, another private poll has come out from another candidate, and they knew that I was interested in your race, and they called me and said that you were coming in fourth in the of the 48 candidates.
48.
That's all you need. All Santa needs is to come in fourth. That puts him in the runoff. And that's how he's going to win this thing.
That'd be awesome. Now,
in that runoff, he's got it.
Is the slate of 48 candidates, are most of them running also in November?
I think most of them are, yes. I think I'm one of maybe a couple that are just doing it for the short 4 months period.
But so, you're serious that you want this job. You want to be elected to Congress from Alaska, do it for 4 months. But I'm looking at your website, which again is SantaClausForAlaska.com. You don't solicit or accept any, not only you don't take money from corporations or dark money sources, you don't take any campaign contributions.
That's correct. I'm loaning myself $400 for the entire campaign. And just like with PACs and stuff, as long as I'm not coordinating or directing anything with a PAC or with an individual, I welcome people to do independent things like make their own Santa signs, put them in their window or on their lawn or phone bank with friends or canvas, that sort of stuff. As long as I'm not directing it, that relieves me of a lot of the Federal Election Commission paperwork and responsibility for that. So I don't have those expenses. And it's easier for someone just to go out and, let's say, make a sign than it is to donate to some party or organization. And who knows where that money goes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I was going to say something about the ranked choice voting, how he knows this, but ranked choice voting reduces partisanship, encourages more candidates to run, like in our contest, boosts voter turnout, takes power away from special interests and out of state influence, and makes it almost impossible for anyone to rig an election. So those are all good reasons.
Well, it figures. And sorry, I'm going to throw in something else here. I'm in Florida, where the idiot governor just signed a new, you know, he signed into law this election police force, but also in the same bill, the same legislation, outlaws ranked choice voting, because this is the anti-democracy state here, I suppose.
I can tell I've got a sister, my close sister in age to me is in Florida, and I hear the horror stories about it. And he's on one of my lists. I'm not sure how you've heard about this one before, but you may have. I have three lists. One is the naughty list, one's the nice list, and one is the spelled SHT list.
Blank, and blank?
Most people are expecting this one blank.
Yeah.
So mine is the short list for devices, ear monitors.
Ah, short eye gun.
But if you're looking at it when it's printed, it just looks like what you would expect.
I see.
And guess who's the number two on that list?
The former guy.
The former guy, and he's number two because even children know
what an election is. Touche. That works for me. That works for me.
And I used to have a website. It was when I was taking him to task. It was, it still is, I think it refers now to my other website. It's f-trump.com. And the F, of course, is a nod to his father, Fred.
Oh, sure.
Who helped make him the way he is.
That's right.
So I figure F Trump, you know, go find something out. So I was using that a few years ago when he was running.
Now, I'm wondering what, I guess, the most high profile opponent that you're running against is the former mayor of Wasilla, former vice presidential running mate with John McCain, which I look back and think that was a surreal moment in time. Have you heard from Sarah Palin? Has she made any snide remarks about your candidacy?
I don't know if she's made any snide remarks, but I met her a long time ago when I was on that Santa's Bless the Children tour. And you know how candidates often say, you know, negative stuff about other candidates. Mm-hmm. I try not to do that. And one of the things I was watching when Hillary and number 45 were debating, one of the moderators said at the end, they said, I'd like to hear each of you say something nice about the other person. And they both came up with something, believe it or not. And I figured if somebody asked me, one of the nice things I could say about Sarah is when I was on that tour years ago, when she was governor, she arranged a meeting for me with several department heads to talk about child health, safety, and welfare, which was very constructive. And a thing came out of it called the One File Per Child, anyway, without getting into it too much. So that's something nice I can actually say about Sarah. And I have no idea what, you know, she thinks about my stuff, and I'm not contentious by nature. So I'll just wait and see how it plays out. I've already heard one campaign attack ad from a different candidate. And it's like, you know, where does that kind of stuff come? To me, it reminds me of that dynamic love versus fear. I'm coming from what I think is a place of love. Mm-hmm. And here's a candidate coming out attacking yours truly.
How do they attack Santa Claus?
they're calling me a Marxist, a communist, an imposter, and whatever else they threw at me. And it's like, you know, where does that kind of stuff come from? And to me, it comes from fear. They're afraid, like you were saying about DeSantis with the ranked choice voting thing, they're afraid they're going to lose something, whatever it is. Some people couch it as, quote, freedom, end quote, but they never explain what they mean by freedom. And meanwhile, I'm, you know, trying to go after Bernie's platform in a good way. And it's totally antithetical to what they're espousing. So when I take an attack ad like that, I figure, well, they're just afraid. You know, they're just behaving like a little kid. Mm-hmm. And they don't know. You know, I had to respond to one of the journalists who asked me when it came out. And I hadn't heard it yet. So right after I had heard it, I can't remember right off the top of the head what I said, but to me, it was an expression of that person's arrogance, ignorance, lies, and fear. And I tried to couch it in a way, they're a big military person and they're running on their military credentials. Uh-huh. And I'm all for supporting the military and law enforcement, and having been it myself, law enforcement. So with the military up here, it's a big deal. So the way I look at it is all wars are against children.
Well, that is true. And especially you see what's happening in Ukraine right now. And definitely children are being affected. They're being killed. They're being tortured. They're being terrorized.
Yeah. And what are we doing supporting the Saudis' efforts to intervene in Yemen? What's up with that?
Good question.
You know, we've got all this stuff out there. It's like, what?
And kids
are looking at this. What are we doing for children? I figure if I go in for a few months, children can see, oh, here's Santa Claus, you know, trying to do something good. Not that other legislators aren't, but I'm a pretty visible person. And why not go in there, give them a little bit of hope, help pass a few things that are, you know, people up here would like to see, then address a couple of things that I would like to see pass, you know, like Medicare for all and, you know, child tax credit, things mm-hmm. like that. You know, why not go in there and do that? I mean, I'm a big union supporter. I've been a union member for 51 years, SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild. Mm-hmm. And even though I haven't worked that much there, I haven't really tried. So, but I'm going to support it by paying dues and whatever. So I'm all for the union stuff. And I like what Biden said about that.
And unions right now are seeing somewhat of a resurgence for the first time in at least a generation, it seems. This is encouraging. Yeah. We could use a boost from Congress.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I'm against oil and big gas subsidies, you know, mining subsidies. They're laughing all the way to the bank.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and Alaska subsidizes that whole thing to an extraordinary degree, in my opinion. So some people will like hearing me say that. Some people won't. And another issue I tackle, which is very difficult for Santa Claus and being a monk, is choice.
Uh-huh. A woman's right to choose what happens with her body, which is also in a very precarious place right now.
Well, I my heart goes out to women. And I think it's whatever that decision is between them and whoever they believe is their creator, if anyone. And, mm-hmm.
and their doctor and their family, right? Their family.
You know, and their family, yeah. So it's a little bit different from what one might expect for Santa, but I'm also a big advocate for First Peoples sovereignty up here. There are several states that have gigantic Native American populations, and we have a lot of people up here in Alaska, obviously, and I'm very supportive of them. And there's some issues right now that are going on in Alaska having to do with mining and fisheries and some other stuff, oil and gas, et cetera. And climate change has a big impact up here, as you might expect. And subsistence, you know, how does that affect people being able to live, you know, find food and all that stuff up here? And is that releasing too much methane gas? Is it going to affect the pandemic stuff when all these things start to, you know, melt and mix and do whatever they're doing with the climate change? So what kind of a message is that for children? You know, we're leaving them a dump.
Yeah, we are.
You know, in many regards. So I'm here and some other people are here to try and help remedy that. in a way that children can see and appreciate, not just say, oh, maybe when I'm 50, you know, things will, no, you know, we'd like to see this a lot sooner than that. It'll take a long time to wean off of oil and gas just because of all our machinery and the military being such a huge consumer of it, et cetera. But there's plenty of momentum to get the alternative energy sources going. Even Carter paid a lot of attention to that when he was president.
Yeah, he did. Now, I know that the Democratic Party does occasionally stick its nose into primaries where it doesn't belong. They've not been very accommodating towards the more progressive candidates out there. I'm wondering if you've heard anything from the party at all.
Yeah, I talk with them. I usually vote with them, attend some of their meetings and stuff. Even up here in Alaska, the party system has its impact. If I were elected, I'd be leaning towards Democrats and voting progressive, make a long story short. And most people here know that. I think Democrats appreciate it. I think they would like to see somebody go in there for the two-year thing, which I understand, and maybe put their effort and stuff into that. I'm not into the whole fundraising, you know,
obviously
campaigning by mail and all the texts and all the other junk people get. So I figure let them do whatever they want for their 2 year thing.
Right.
But I'm going to make a big effort for the 4 months just to kind of set an example and show that maybe somebody can get elected who's running on a, you know, platform more oriented towards love than fear.
That would be great. But you're trying to do it without just the $400 you're putting into your campaign and nothing else. So you said you don't have a car. And Alaska is twice the size of Texas. So are you traveling the state? Are you meeting with potential constituents? You're not doing any of that.
No traditional campaigning.
Wow.
Tell me if I'm wrong about this, Santa. A friend of mine told me on the phone the other day, I met Santa. And then when I spoke to you, he's in Anchorage. And you told me, you know, you were in the North Pole. You didn't go down to Anchorage. And yet this guy said Santa was campaigning, and I went up to him, and he, you know, came away from that thinking that he had met Santa Claus.
Oh,
now,
well, maybe one of my supporters is, which I would encourage, maybe wear a Santa hat, you know, talk with people, spread the word about the campaign without, you know, misstating anything. And yeah, I'm all for individuals being very creative and getting the message out however they feel comfortable doing it without a party telling them what to do or trying to get them to cough up money or any of that stuff. That's anathema to me. I can't imagine why people do it.
But you don't worry about someone, you know, posing as you and giving bad information.
Well, people could do that. I mean, I can't pose as Sarah, for example.
Right. But, no, you can't.
But somebody else could. You know, whoever wants to start that as a precedent is going to, there are a lot of unintended consequences doing something like that. Yep. So I would, if somebody is going to support my campaign, you know, please just refer people to Bernie's site for my platform, his platform.
Now, have you ever heard from Bernie Sanders? Have you ever had a conversation with him?
I haven't had that, but I did meet him once. He's a very affable person, very bright, very sharp, good sense of humor.
Howie, what kind of feedback are you getting?
Oh, people are so happy. I mean, it's unbelievable. Anytime I post something on Twitter, I get tons and tons of people saying this is giving me hope. And, you know, it's just amazing. And, you know, I did another radio show. Mm-hmm. With Santa, and there, again, a huge amount of feedback from people, you know, and it's just, you know, I think people get it. They like the idea that someone is running on love and not on hate. They like the idea that someone is focusing on children. And
someone's not asking them for money,
which is like that too.
Crazy. And with that, we come to the end of another episode of The Nicole Sandler Show. Special thanks to Santa Claus and Lisa Graves. I'll be back tomorrow, live and in color, with Jason Leopold, the brilliant FOIA master, as I prefer to call him, who, along with the rest of the BuzzFeed investigative news division, is being let go. Unreal. And that's the state of journalism today. All right. So we'll talk to Jason tomorrow and we'll usher in the weekend. Don't forget, Mother's Day is Sunday. If you don't have a great gift for the mom in your life, email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. Let's paint her a pet portrait or something else. All right. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Even though we weren't surprised by the outcome, we were still blindsided by the leak of this draft opinion from the Supreme Court and their plan to overturn Roe v. Wade and control what women can and can't do with their own bodies. And Democrats are grasping at straws. On Tuesday, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer promised to take a vote on it.
This is as urgent and as real as it gets. We will vote to protect a woman's right to choose, and every American is going to see which side every senator stands on.
Okay, and what's that going to do? Reports say that Democrats are trying to soften their legislation, introducing a bill to codify Roe v. Wade and to win more votes for it by removing references to white supremacy and people other than women who can become pregnant. But they insist they're not changing its substance, but still nobody expects them to succeed. A narrower bill, backed by the two Republican senators who are pro-abortion rights, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, but that one also looks to be going nowhere. Officials have discussed, among other ideas, whether it be possible to offer women Medicaid funding to travel to states where abortion is legal if the procedure isn't available where they live. Scrambling. The leaked draft also energized anti-abortion groups and sparked a flood of donations to abortion clinics and abortion rights groups. NARAL, Pro-Choice America, saw donations jump 1,400% in 24 hours. 51% of those donors were giving for the first time. President Biden is getting tough, well, with his words anyway, in response to a question about the leaked SCOTUS draft opinion, which also shows Justice Alito attacking landmark LGBTQ civil rights cases. The president said,
"This MAGA crowd is really the most extreme political organization that's existed in American history and recent American history."
But it is important to note that nothing has changed yet. The official opinion won't be released by the court until likely the end of June, on the final day the court releases opinions. But already plans are being made. Clinics in states likely to maintain access to abortion procedures are preparing for a potential influx of out-of-state patients. Jennifer Welch is president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Illinois. She said, quote, "This is a devastating blow for millions of people who will find themselves in a vast abortion desert." Although Alito, in this draft opinion, tries to make it clear that this ruling should not necessarily impact other decisions like the right to same-sex marriage or interracial marriage or contraception. But opponents say Alito's attempt to wall off abortion from everything else raises several questions and legal challenges. We all must engage now. Complacency and despair are not options. Meanwhile, the January 6th committee on Tuesday met with Donald Trump Jr. He testified for a few hours, apparently, via video teleconference, and that's really all we know. And the countdown clock to the start of the public hearings is now ticking down to June 9th in prime time. Meanwhile, even more newly released audio shows House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy once again attacking the former president behind his back in the days just after the January 6th attack. Among other criticisms, McCarthy is heard saying,
"Look, what the president did is atrocious and totally wrong."
Wow, I actually agree with Kevin McCarthy.
"I want to reach out to Biden. I wanted the president to meet with Biden, make a smooth transition."
Making a smooth transition. Wow. We never heard that before, not publicly anyway. The Fed finally did it on Wednesday. They raised interest rates a half a percentage point higher to tamp down inflation. This was the central bank's biggest interest rate increase since 2000. Fed Chair Jerome Powell said after the meeting that the Fed isn't actively considering raising rates by 0.75 percentage point at a time. Okay, that's good. And that news apparently set stocks surging. Speaking of the former guy, another day, another loss. This time, a New York appellate judge has denied his request to halt those $10,000 daily fines after Trump was held in contempt for failing to cooperate with the state's attorney general's investigation into his business practices. Turning to Ukraine, one Ukrainian commander is describing heavy, bloody battles unfolding at that steel plant in Mariupol as Russian forces breached the perimeter and there was, quote, nonstop shelling and assault overnight. Despite efforts to evacuate civilians trapped inside the complex, hundreds remain, including a reported 30 children. Although a few hundred have been evacuated, at least 150 employees have been killed and thousands remain unaccounted for. Inside this plant, that until recently was a major player globally, it was producing 4 million tons of steel annually. And amid all of the horrors that have unfolded in the war on Ukraine, the Russian bombing of that theater in Mariupol stands out as the single deadliest known attack against civilians to date. An Associated Press investigation found evidence that the attack, in fact, was far deadlier than originally estimated, killing closer to 600 people inside and outside the building than the 300 that was originally reported. And if that's not enough death and destruction for you, NBC News has proclaimed, based on its own data and reporting, that more than 1 million Americans have now died as a result of COVID-19. And the WHO announced that COVID has killed an estimated 15 million people across the world in 2020 and 2021. That's nearly three times the official count of COVID deaths over the same period, underlying the severity of a pandemic that still has not been curbed after over 2 years. And finally, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced its 2022 inductees on Wednesday. Dolly Parton, who said she hadn't earned the honor and asked not to be considered because she doesn't do rock and roll, made the list, along with others like Eminem and Lionel Richie, who also are not rock and roll, just to be clear. Dolly Parton said she would accept gracefully if she were inducted, and I'm looking forward to it. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.